The Guardian.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. From the unusual to the extraordinary, your website stands out when you build it with Squarespace. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com/guardian.
In today's Football Weekly Extra, Chelsea controversy. Mourinho causes storm by telling medic to stop sprinting on the pitch. John Obi Mikel says he's looking forward to his best season ever. Meanwhile, with a trip to baggy busting Man City lined up for Sunday, we take a guess at who Jose will pick to carry the can if that game goes wrong. There's other Premier League fun too, like Crystal Palace Arsenal. Could the Gunners go bottom by Sunday night? What awaits for Man United under the lights on Friday at Villa? With a West Ham fan trying not to get overexcited, and we've got a doctor who is allowed to attend football matches, Sid Lowe, on a super duper 9-goals thriller between Barcelona and Sevilla. All of that, plus other bits too, probably, in this Football Weekly Extra. Hey, here we are, Football Weekly Extra. Barry Glendinning.
Hello.
Jacob Steinberg.
Hello.
And James Horngarthall.
Hello.
Hello. Hey, Jacob, calm down, mate. I know you're excited, but it's only the first game of the season.
But it was good.
It was good, though, wasn't it? Wow. We'll talk about West Ham's upcoming second game of the season very, very shortly. But let's begin with proper preview stuff and two huge games on Sunday. Man City against Chelsea. Well, now, since we last spoke, Man City looked sparkling, really, away at the Hawthorns on Monday night, didn't they? 3-0. People getting quite excited about Yaya Toure back in form. Company with his goal and hear my roar celebration. Sterling, a reasonable debut as well. So a lot of questions about what the pace of Raheem Sterling, for example, might do to Ivanovic.
Well, having seen what Jefferson Montero and his pace did to Ivanovic last week, I would imagine Branislav is probably wishing they were facing someone other than Manchester City this weekend. You know, he's not a bad player. He's a very, very good player. And like most people have pointed out, you don't often see him get taken school as he was in the opening game of the season. But
do you think we might this Sunday, though?
It's possible, definitely, because West Brom were stretched all over the place by Jesus Navas and Sterling on Monday night. Just couldn't cope with them at all. And I suppose Jose Mourinho will have to offer Ivanovic something in the way of protection.
But he generally takes a fairly defensive attitude in games like this, no?
I would expect that Ramirez might play on the right and he'll drop one of Oscar or Willian, probably Oscar, and maybe move Fabregas forward. But in those big games, he never plays, especially away from home, almost never plays all three of Oscar, Willian and Hazard, because the midfield is still arguably not quite right for the big games with Fabregas and Matic there. And I think that they should have bought possibly someone like Schneiderlin or a player who could control the game and win the ball and use it well, which they don't really have. Mikel and Ramirez, neither of them are really up to the standard, I think, at the very highest level, despite being good players. So I think you can see a bit of why, in that regard, why maybe Mourinho has been a little bit angsty in the build-up to the season. I don't think he's especially happy with what Chelsea have done in the transfer market this summer.
Because all they've signed is replacements for replacements. So Begovic has replaced Cech, and Falcao has replaced... Well, Falcao's not going to be a starting striker, is he? He's replacing Drogba. So, considering at the start of the summer transfer window, there was talk of Griezmann, there was talk of Arda Turan,
Pedro as well.
Pedro. It hasn't really materialised. And
Baba Rahman's materialised.
What? Baba, yeah. It does sound like something you'd order at Wagamama's. Aside from that, I think we know that Mourinho likes to keep his squads small and that sort of thing, but I can't imagine he's too thrilled at going, particularly given how they performed in the first couple of games this season.
Baba Rahman, who is a fullback himself, I think. But
Left back.
So it'll be interesting.
So Azpilicueta could move back over to the right?
Possibly.
Yeah. Okay.
On the Sterling point, one of his best moments last season was against Chelsea when he scored that solo goal in the semi-final for Liverpool.
That's true.
So perhaps he could do something like that again with his pace, because they are troubled by it. I think Chelsea are going to be very defensive on Sunday.
No Courtois.
Much like they were against City last season.
Yes. 2-1-1 draws in the two fixtures. No Courtois.
Yeah.
I mean, he's suspended till the 23rd, I think. Hmm. All right, and Begovic coming in. But Begovic is a fine keeper.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, many people questioned why he went to Chelsea. You know, it's that kind of trend of really good goalkeepers going to clubs only to be standing goalkeepers. Yeah, I think he would start at most, say, another top six club. But yeah, he's going to get his opportunity now. I think that's not the issue for Chelsea. I think the issue is, they do seem to be lacking that sort of vim and vigour that they certainly had at the first half of last season, and they don't really have a spark going forward. They seem to be so reliant on Hazard to supply that, that yeah, all the players that they brought in, for example, Cuadrado, who could provide that, hasn't provided it. And yeah, you now look at some of the players that they've sold and think, well, they could really do with a Mohamed Salah, they could do with a De Bruyne, they could do with those sort of players, and instead they're lacking.
Wow. Schürrle was another one. Schürrle. Who, yeah, you could say that the squad they had started with last season was better than what they have now, the overall squad.
Interesting point, Jacob. If it goes badly for them in this game on Sunday, they'll find themselves 5 points behind City. An early stage of the season, Barry, but that's a big psychological blow for them to deal with. You sounded like you were quite excited by City's performance on Monday.
Yeah, it was mightily impressive. I mean, Touré in form is, there are a few finer sights in football than him in full flow, but he seems, you know, presumably the rest he's had after playing back-to-back international tournaments has done him a lot of good, and you know, his various contractual stuff has been sorted. So, you know, if he's happy and informed, he's a great asset to the team. Just like when he's cranky and out of form and agitating for moves elsewhere, his agent is agitating for moves on his behalf, then the team suffers. So. And I said before, I don't think Chelsea... I think the start of the season's come too soon for Chelsea. They didn't look fit in the Community Shield. They didn't look fit against Swansea. And I think they could take a pasting here.
Really?
Yeah.
You're calling a pasting for Chelsea?
I'm not calling it, but I wouldn't be surprised if they lost 2-3-0.
Really? James, call this.
Well... You wonder, as when City play in Europe, and yeah, they play that sort of very flat 4-4-2 against more sophisticated, tactically savvy teams, they tend to get undone. But as we saw last season, these tend to be quite close games. I just think City, I know they picked up on it on Monday Night Football with Kompany's reaction to scoring that goal. Not just him, but as a whole, they look really hungry. And I know Carragher was saying, look, all teams are like that. But you do get the feeling that City have a point to prove, feel that they underperformed, let themselves down last year, and that yeah, they do seem to win the title in alternate years.
For me, it's ever since Pellegrini got his new deal, the players are just over the moon, really fired up.
But Mourinho's new deal hasn't done that for...
No.
It just seems to have erupted everything.
No.
But if they get De Bruyne as well, I mean...
Well, yeah, okay, so Jan Verhus says, City are throwing a wad of cash on De Bruyne, Kev. Why?
I mean, he was the player of the season in the Bundesliga last year, elected by the league and Kicker magazine. Broke the record for assists, got more than 20. I think in all competitions, got into double figures in goals as well. He's outstanding. I mean, I saw him in the German Super Cup against Bayern the other week, and yeah, hit the bar, released another player through on goal, set up Bentner for the equaliser. If he can make Nicholas Bentner score, then you know what's he going to do at City? I think he is worth the money, absolutely. To be the best player in that league and not be playing for Bayern Munich, when you think there are players like Robben, Ribéry, Goetze and others, you know, is quite outstanding, and he's an excellent cross with the ball.
All right. Before we move on, Barry, I know you're keen to get a mention in for doctors, be they male and female, of Chelsea, who may have suffered some kind of demotion because of their enthusiasm to get on the field to take care of poor old Eden Hazard on last weekend. What's your take?
Well, it's a weird story. I mean, the doctor, Eva and John Fearn, the physio. They haven't done anything wrong. If they hadn't gone on the field, it would have been a dereliction of their professional duty, specifically hers, because she's a doctor. And it seems very odd that they've been demoted. I mean, Jose Mourinho is wrong on this one. There's no... It's not a matter of opinion, it's a matter of fact.
Other managers will say that the doctors shouldn't, because once they come on, the player has to be taken off, and therefore you end up losing time that you might be served by trying to get a winning goal in. So the fact, other managers seem to suggest that it should be the managers who cue the doctors on.
But FIFA regulations state that once the ref summons the doctors, then the player has to go off whether the doctor comes on or not.
I think that it must be bubbling away under the surface that this isn't just happened because of Saturday, but to go out publicly and criticise someone like that about their profession and denigrate them in that way is totally unacceptable.
Well, you wouldn't see Pep Guardiola doing that. Oh, actually, yeah, you would, because he did it in the middle of a Champions League game, didn't he? And then they all resigned en masse afterwards. So it's not entirely exclusive to Mourinho, this kind of friction with the medical staff. Do you think it's to do... Do you think that the whole Diego Costa hamstring saga is in any way connected with this?
I think that he's clearly not happy about that. He was said last Wednesday after the... Fiorentina defeat that I thought that he was going to play against Arsenal, and then he said, and then he couldn't. I need to understand what's going on. And it seems at the time like he might be having, I sort of thought, is he having a dig at Costa here? But maybe it's...
But that's a problem they inherited, that they knew they were getting into when they bought Diego Costa, because his hamstrings were a problem at Atletico Madrid. He played when he quite clearly perhaps shouldn't have in towards the end of that season in La Liga in the Champions League final. And it would be unfair to put that at the physio's door.
If that's what's happening.
I mean, there may well be more to this than meets the eye that we don't know about. That seems to be the case. But Jose has got this one wrong, and it seems a bit off that no one from the club has come out.
Yeah, but I think the club are going to fall back on the Facebook post, basically, and that's going to be the support. And... I think he's got their support.
I hope he apologises.
Yeah. She is owed an apology for that bollock.
As is the other one.
Yeah.
John Fearn.
John Fearn.
There's another one. There's another one in there.
Yep. Yeah, although he's the physio rather than the doctor.
He's a physio.
It says more about the media and fans.
His curls are not pre-Raphaelite as well.
Has centred on... exactly. It says more about the media and the fans that the focus is centred on Ava than it has on John Fearn. That piece in the Mail today about her pre-Raphaelite curls and toned body and light Spanish accent is just
not knowing much about her love life either, which I really want to find out about.
Producer Ben here, listeners, reminding you that the Football Weekly Roadshow is headed your way. We'll be in the Northwest in September for a night of ungodly football frolics at Manchester Cathedral. That's part of the Manchester Football Writing Festival. And then in October, we're headed to the seaside and a Friday night spot at the Brighton Comedy Festival. Badum and indeed Tish. We'll be announcing more dates and more destinations on our UK tour soon. For more information on all of the Football Weekly live events and to book your tickets, head to theguardian.com/guardianlive.
Back to the football, Jacob. Back to the football. Because early on Sunday, before Man City and Chelsea face off at the Etihad, there's a sizzling London derby down at Selhurst Park. Crystal Palace taking on Arsenal. This one could see Gunners go bottom of the table. Now,
yeah, but you're not meant to actually pay any attention to the league table before three games in.
But if Arsenal are bottom, I bet we will do.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Now, Arsenal beat Palace 2-1 in both of the meetings last season. The first one, though, came just after Tony Pulis had resigned, leaving them in the hands of...
Keith Millen.
That's right, Keith Millen.
Yeah.
Well rescued.
Yep.
And this Palace side look an entirely...
Well, the second time it was under Pardew.
Right.
And there was a crazy finish where Arsenal had been 2-0 up for ages and cruising. And then Glenn Murray came on and scored in the 93rd minute or something. And suddenly Arsenal completely panicked, and Palace with the next attack bombed down the left wing. The ball came in, and I think it was Ospina came flying out, completely missed it, and Murray at the far post hit the post with his header. And, you know, that was kind of a little glimpse of what Arsenal can sometimes be like, the complete control followed by a minute of blind panic and almost throwing away the game, which was kind of seen for 90 minutes against West Ham last weekend, when they come into the season with such optimism and beating Chelsea for the first, well, Mourinho's Chelsea for the first time, and then suddenly it's back to square one, and lots of angry people on Arsenal fan TV shouting at microphones and cameras outside about Wenger, and so yeah, but I think that, although I think a lot of people will be waiting for Arsenal to lose this game, I actually quite fancy them.
Why?
They have a habit of doing this, of bouncing back, and when they are supposedly about to go into full blown crisis, and suddenly they'll put it together, and then they'll raise your expectations again, before eventually there'll be some kind of slump. Like they'll go on a 10 game winning streak, and then there'll be a kind of a Monaco game where suddenly it will all come back, and Wenger will have to defend them again.
Right.
They'll be top four, basically.
This Sunday, do you think they're bouncing back? Or Bellerin is a doubt. So when you think of the kind of pace that Crystal Palace can offer on the wings...
I mean, they've got a crisis at goalkeeper, haven't they?
Have they?
Hasn't yet been resolved. I thought a lot of the optimism is about Arsenal's sort of season, some people making them favourites for the title, is a little bit misplaced when you think all they've really done is make one signing, and that signing was where they were sort of most looking for improvement, and in the first game, okay, let's not judge him on one game, but is at fault seriously for those things? I mean, that's one way of really deflating it. There is this pattern, as Jacob alluded to Arsenal, which, you know, I just, you know, I completely agree. I think they'll win.
Arsenal?
Yeah.
I think Palace are a different proposition. I think Pardew's going to be really fired up for this. I think Kabay will really enjoy taking on Arsenal.
Palace
had
a funny record at home. They had a great record away under Pardew last season, and it's continued into this season. But there were times when they did lack a bit of creativity in the final third at home again, and they had a few dodgy results under Pardew.
As you said about Palace's wide players, I mean, one of the issues that Arsenal had against West Ham was they were so narrow. There was so much space out wide in the wings for them to exploit, and you would expect maybe Bolasie, Zaha and Alag to...
Because fullbacks, I mean, you say the problem position being goalkeeper, but fullbacks have long been... I know Bellerin came through and did wonderfully last... As I say, probably not going to feature in this with a knee problem, but that's been a... With Nacho Monreal on the other side or whoever's out there. What about Friday? Now, just as I was wandering into the studio, a little tweet came through saying, Friday night football, is it the end of our footballing culture?
They've had it before.
Yeah.
They had it in the Championship.
Right. So, but in the Premier League, Jacob?
Yeah. There was one a few years ago where Arsenal played. When Arsenal won the Invincibles, they played on a Friday night.
Did they?
Once, yeah.
The irony here is the fact that this game has been shifted, not for TV reasons, but because there's a...
Champions League playoff?
No, it's the EDL. EDL having a march, I think, in Birmingham.
Yeah, they have in Walsall, I think.
Is it? Right. And presumably in defence of English values, and they've ended up destroying part of that by having the game shifted. So they're going to play on a Friday night. I think that's quite exciting. I'm quite looking forward to that bit of Friday night football action.
Friday, I think, should be just have a few pints, catch up with friends, that kind of thing.
Isn't that what people do at the football, though?
Yeah. I've always enjoyed going to a Friday game. You wouldn't want to do it every week, but...
Don't would be my advice, then.
Yeah. But
still a voluntary activity.
Yeah, no, but yeah. You wouldn't want to have to go to see your team play on a Friday night every week.
Oh, I see.
But that one-off night, it's quite fun.
Is the game being shifted so Aston Villa fans can go on the EDL march? Or because they're worried there will be violence?
I think it's a policing issue. Yeah. Let's talk about Villa against Man United. They both had 1-0 wins, rather underwhelmingly, certainly in Man United's case. Villa, quite a boost for them after a troubled pre-season, or at least plenty of worries for their fans. 7 players in. They haven't beaten Man United at home in the Premier League since, James?
Well, it's in 20 games, I think, isn't it?
So August 1995,
They never win with kids.
Oh, yeah, okay. All right, then. But Tim Sherwood's been here before, hasn't he, with this not beaten Man United out of place since. Do you remember when he took Spurs to Old Trafford and got their first win there?
No.
That was AVB.
Was that Andre Villas-Boas?
Yeah.
Bugger.
But Sherwood did do it a year later, to be fair.
Yeah.
He did win at Old Trafford.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
But he had
the first time in a year.
First time in, yeah.
12 months. Well, possibly less. I don't know. I'm talking this one up because I think the Villa are a team on a crest of a wave.
Yep, but they were pretty poor.
Were you at Bournemouth?
I was, yeah.
All right, tell us.
They were quite poor for a half against Bournemouth. It didn't click at all, but they had, five new players starting in the side. So it was kind of understandable that maybe they lacked a little bit of understanding with each other. And then they imposed themselves after the break and were much more attacking than they had been. They sat back quite a lot in the first half, invited on a lot of pressure, and were lucky not to be one or two goals down because Bournemouth missed some good chances.
Really?
And then they started to take a grip of the game at the start of the second half, and when Rudy Gesteg came on, he, with his terrifying aerial ability and his just amazing jump and the power that he has and accuracy of his heading, scored the goal. So I think he, for £6 million, is going to be a good replacement for Benteke. Probably not in the same class, but he's been improving a lot, I think, in the last few years. I think people who maybe saw him at Cardiff and when he started out there would have said he would never be a Premier League player. But he scored 22 goals last season for Blackburn. I think he scored something like 20 goals with his head in the last two seasons.
He has, yeah. That's so, five more than any other player in the top four divisions.
Yeah, so he'll be a handful for anybody, I think. And if the delivery's right, I'm not sure exactly how you're meant to stop him getting to those crosses.
Right.
Because he's very, very powerful.
Brad Guzan also, as you said, Bournemouth had a number of chances in the first half, should have scored. Guzan played well, which Sherwood took credit for because he said, like, dropping him last season made him. So
were you there as well, James?
No, I wasn't, but I saw his comments after the game.
Oh, I see. Right, okay. With an aerial matchup, you'd normally want to play a big card like Marouane and Fellaini, but he's still suspended, so that's not an option Van Gaal can go to. What do you think, Barry?
I think a lot of Manchester United fans and people who were poo-pooing the notion that they might challenge for the league title were pointing to their defence as the weak spot in the team. Chris Smalling was absolutely superb against Spurs last week, I thought, but I'm not sure how reliable he is, as undeniably a good player as he is, and Daley Blind is beside him in the centre of the defence, and yeah, I'd say Rudy Gestede will fancy his chances of bagging a goal, but whether or not it'll be enough for Villa to get a win or a draw, I don't know.
Will De Gea play?
That's the thing. We're going to talk to Seb, we hope, a little bit later on, find out what's going on with Real Madrid's attempts to do a Raphael Honigstein and buy De Gea.
The received wisdom on Romero is that, you know, everyone remarks on the fact that, look, this player has been a bench warmer for 2 years, both at Sampdoria and at Monaco. You know, what's behind this? He can't be that good, even though he's been to back-to-back major tournament finals with Argentina. But the reason why he wasn't playing at Samp was because when they bought him, they were in the Champions League playoffs. They gave him this huge contract for 4 years. They then got relegated to the second division, and he said, right, I'm just going to sit on this contract. And they tried to get rid of him. His agent is Mina Raiola. Tried to offload him. Couldn't get a buyer, and that was the case last summer, even though he had a really good World Cup. And they, to try and force the issue, Samp bought another goalkeeper, said, look, we've got one. We don't want you anymore. We want you off the payroll. And he again just sat on the money. So it's not because he's a bad goalkeeper. He's actually a very good goalkeeper. Is he of De Gea's level? No, he's on that kind of maybe one, two tiers below. But just because he's been on the bench for 2 years you have to know the context. So
yeah, exactly. Go. All right, super. Quick verdict then, James, Jacob, Aston Villa, Man United.
I don't know. United are very hard to call at the moment. They still look very slow, which was the problem last season. There's not much pace to either many of the players or just the tempo at the moment. It's still a work in progress, but they probably have more firepower than Villa, and they've got such a good record there that just about United.
Just about United. James, you're nodding.
Well,
In the interest of time, nodding.
We saw some flashes from Memphis in the first half against Spurs. He maybe didn't live up to the huge expectation around him, but I'd really like him to see sort of this game be his one. You know?
Oh, really?
Yeah, this is where we see the true Memphis begin to emerge.
Well, there's a lot of excitement about another new signing, Jadon Shaqiri, who's joining Stoke. Of course, they're going to be at White Hart Lane. This is on Saturday. Here's a stat for you. Did you know that with his arrival, Stoke now have 5 Champions League winners in their squad? That's more than Arsenal, Man City and Liverpool put together.
But if you look at how many minutes they played in Champions League finals.
That's just an incredible stat.
They played, I think, a combined 1 minute in Champions League finals.
Can you name them, James?
So there's Shaqiri.
Yep.
There is Bojan.
Yep.
Afellay.
Barcelona players, essentially.
Yep.
Oh, and Marko Arnautovic, who was Ibra's understudy at Inter Milan. Well then...
Did he actually come on in the final then? Oh, no, he's a winner. He's a winner, yeah. And I'm not sure who the other one is. Is it that fella they got from Real Madrid? If you know, listeners, tell us all about it. What's going to happen when they take on Spurs then at White Hart Lane? Stoke did a double in this fixture last season, or in clashes with Spurs. They've got Shawcross out for a month after back surgery. That's a big loss. I'm hearing 2 or 3 months.
You think of the spine of that team that has gone. Mm. You know, Begovic, Shawcross, Nzonzi, and they've taken it in a different direction over the last couple of years. I didn't think they were great against Liverpool. I think, as Hughes said, they got to about 70 minutes and thought actually, here we're going to settle for a draw. And then Coutinho came up with the goods for them. Will Shaqiri start? Is he?
I don't know.
I'd say it's unlikely. I see Stefan Effenberg, the controversial German, has come out scathing in his criticism of Shaqiri for signing for Stoke. He said he should have gone to Schalke, who only offered him half as much money. It's no great surprise he went to Stoke. But it's a brilliant signing, and apparently their season ticket sales have rocketed up. His replica shirt is already the highest selling in the club history. And, he said all the right things at the press conference. I wouldn't imagine Stoke was his first choice, but good luck to him. You know, it puts him in the shop window for other... I think there's a lot of players like him coming to the middle-ranking Premier League teams who are probably... they're getting offered great money. Mm. I think Andre Ayew got a $5 million-plus signing on fee at Swansea. Really? That's a great incentive to go to a club that might not be as fashionable as some of those who were also after him. And, Shaqiri's he's an absolutely terrific player.
There was huge enthusiasm when he arrived at San Siro. The thousands of Inter fans at the airport welcome him, and they were all turning up at the games as well. So what went wrong there? I mean, you saw him in action last season. Is he going to make the difference at Stoke?
Well, he made an instant impact. He scored in every competition he played in, Serie A, Coppa Italia, Europa League. And then he kind of fizzled out. And that was put down to the fact that he hadn't played much at Bayern Munich before Inter signed him. They were in the middle of a big winter break. And he wasn't fit. And then there was a game against Parma. Parma, of course, were relegation fodder, bankrupt, all their players unpaid, and they drew with Inter 1-1. And Shaqiri had given the ball away like 23 times in that game. Mancini, the sense was that he thought that Shaqiri is a little bit one-dimensional. That he just played on the right, would like to cut inside onto his left and shift it and try and hit the far post.
Mm.
And...
That's always held Robin back, hasn't it?
And also, there was also this sense that, with Shaqiri that adding into that one dimensional thing, it wasn't particularly tactically intelligent. But I think that might suit the Premier League because we all know it's a less structured, more anarchic kind of league. So I'm sure he'll do well. I don't think he was sold because he was a flop.
Right.
It's because I think Mancini decided I want to build a completely different team to the one I was going to build in January. And we need to sell players in order to recoup the money that we've already spent, which is close to 80 million. And Shaqiri was the one with the most market, as they say in Italy, that had the most interest.
Right.
Although he had to be persuaded to go to Stoke because Stoke had already put up the money that they were going to that Inter wanted for Shaqiri a month ago, and he was like, "No, I'm not."
He wasn't stoked.
He wasn't stoked by it. But Hughes, to be fair to him, has done very well to sell the club to him.
Now, can you stop prodding me, Jacob? We'll talk about West Ham next, all right? Go on then. West Ham, one of the standout winners from the opening weekend, taking on the other standout winners, one of the other standout winners, Leicester.
Yeah.
At Upton Park. Yeah. Enjoy it while you can.
Well, Bilic being very clear already that if West Ham have, he said, 5% drop-off, then they'll be in trouble against Leicester, a side that he rates highly, as everyone should really, given what kind of form they've been on since the start of April. Since actually,
West Ham.
Since they beat West Ham at the start of April, which was the start of their brilliant escape from relegation. I think, yeah, I mean, obviously everybody was a little bit down on them, maybe outside of Leicester after they sacked Pearson and got in Ranieri, and obviously Ranieri hasn't had the greatest record in the last few years as a manager, and yeah, I suppose he was regarded with a slight sense of amusement after his time at Chelsea as well, and maybe he did do a fairly good job there, but it kind of gets lost a little bit in the Tinkerman image as
and
well.
And he's not Mourinho.
Yeah, he's not Mourinho, and they were always second under him. Or sometimes even lower.
But they're not going to find the Hammers' defence quite as forgiving as they did against Sunderland.
West Ham's defence was pretty... Well, Ogbonna and Reed is probably one of the best centre-back partnerships sort of in the mid-table realm. And Ogbonna was very impressive on Saturday.
Yeah.
I don't know too much about him. Maybe you two know more. But he looked very good against Arsenal.
No, he's an Italian international. He's always been a rising
even when
star.
He was in Serie B, he was in the squad for Italy. Big money move to Juventus, €15 million from Torino. And I don't think it's any shame not to be able to regularly get in a team which probably has the best defence, well, in Europe last year with their BBC, Bonucci, Barzagli and Chiellini. And to be honest, when he did play last year, he did seem to have finally assimilated to how they wanted to play, which is with a back three or back four. So I think he's a good signing.
The other one, what was one they got from Italy, who should be on the bench for the first time, is Obiang.
Yeah.
I don't know much about him.
So. Yeah, less excited about him, I think it's fair to say. Great sort of onomatopoeic name, though. What's the asanatic name?
Yeah. I think he's a nephew Biang. Of...
It's kind of got that.
The nephew of the dictator in Guinea, is it?
Is that right?
Equatorial Guinea, I think so, yeah.
Okay. I wanted to talk about the fellow who'll be, will he be having another start in front of the defence? Reece Oxford.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
16 years old and already the new Rio Ferdinand and future England captain and so on. I mean, it's one game, so...
She
can get too carried away.
Yeah, I know, but when you were sat there watching it, what did you think?
He was very impressive. But I mean, I had seen him play before because he was played in the Europa League qualifiers in the same position and, again, looked very assured and composed and didn't look like he was a 16-year-old kid who was not yet got his GCSE results. Don't know if that's today or next week.
I think it might be
today. Today is A-level, so I think it might be next week.
Next week.
GCSEs.
Right.
So he's not even got those. So you think how far actually he's got to go to still make it as a top player.
Jacob,
it's many, many years.
Yeah.
But if you speak to a few people who know him, they say that, to be honest, we weren't surprised that he just took so easily to the game against Arsenal, no nerves, and he's very, very confident. And when he was, I think it was a quote from the academy manager saying that when he got into the under-18s, well, I should be playing in the under-21s, getting to the under-21s, I should be playing training with the first team. And each time he's just made the step up. And
Is he asking to train with Chelsea now?
Well, I mean, this is the thing. West Ham had this great generation come through under Tony Carr 15, 20 years ago, and obviously they all left. And the idea would be that the Olympic Stadium move would stop this kind of thing happening, because for a few years no one's really come through at the Academy of Football, as it's known.
Right.
But a few more alongside Oxford are starting to get through as well. Another one I think that is going to be quite good is Josh Cullen. So, yeah, hopefully that would be the kind of thing now that will stop them from losing their best kids.
Right. You're being quite measured about West Ham and their prospects, but given the kind of record they had against Arsenal and the way they played on the weekend, was there a part of you that was thinking, oh my God, where could we go? Could we be in Europe? Imagine that. West Ham being in Europe.
But hopefully not with starting against Andorra and part-timers on the 2nd
right.
of July.
Yeah.
Those games were very, very weird. No one really sort of knew how to approach them. You could tell the crowd were kind of just expecting them to score 10 goals and then suddenly realise that West Ham's players are still basically in pre-season and you're playing against teams who do actually know what they're doing and also would really want to beat a Premier League side. So they were quite tough games, and the one against Astra, they were a good side as well and had beaten Lyon the previous year.
But what about West Ham under Bilic this year? Were you optimistic before the game?
No, not that optimistic.
And afterwards?
I think the squad is still very small. They still need more players. You saw a couple of days ago they were going for Joey Barton, and that didn't come off for various reasons.
What happened there?
Well, the talk overall is that the fans' backlash stopped buying him, and he released a very diplomatic video.
ISIS hostage video, basically.
It looked a little bit like that in that kind of style, same production values. But they still need a striker because Carroll and Valencia are injured.
They don't really need Barton, do they?
No, I wouldn't have thought they needed Barton, but they. I think the difference between them, Allardyce and Bilic on Sunday was when they went 2-0 up, they carried on not attacking, but they didn't just immediately sit back. They made sure that Arsenal had to think about stopping the counter-attacks, which under Allardyce, there would come a point in every game where they were winning where there would just be this huge retreat. And sometimes it worked and sometimes it really didn't.
See, travelling Leicester fans have to pay £45 each for their tickets, adults, for this game, which is a 45% price hike on the same match last year.
Wow.
So the Football Supporters Federation are kind of up in arms about, you know, their 20s plenty campaign for away fans. They want clubs to only charge £20 for away fans. Clubs, and say it costs clubs £1 million a year, I think. And the clubs are saying, oh, we can't do that because we haven't budgeted for it, which is complete nonsense. But because Norwich came up from the Championship, their parachute payment of £24 million has been redistributed among all the Premier League clubs. So the Football Supporters Federation have made the rather salient point that that's over £1 million each, which these clubs haven't budgeted for, which would exactly cover the cost of the 20s plenty
Brilliant.
Campaign.
So the Premier League clubs are adopting that, are they?
Of course they're not.
£45 is nothing to see Riyad Mahrez, who looks like one of the best wingers in the league now for Leicester.
Producer Ben is banging on the glass window saying, we have to move on now. We have to move on. So we will, after this, part three.
Hello.
Ah, Sid Lowe.
Hello, Jimbo. How are you?
I'm all right, Sid. How was your summer?
Long. It's not over yet.
All right.
I've not been on holiday yet. I'm going tomorrow.
Where are you going on holidays?
I'm going to Mallorca.
Oh, nice.
I'm staying in Spain, yeah.
Magaluf.
That means I can get the car, which means the dog can go.
Yeah. Ah, brilliant. Yeah, well, she'll love that.
Well, yeah.
Estella hits Magaluf, yeah?
Yeah, woof.
Sid, as you say, the summer is still very much an ongoing situation for the Spanish, as are one or two big transfer tales. What can you tell us about Pedro to Man United and De Gea going the other way?
Well, let's start with Pedro. Pedro on Wednesday night, of course, played the European Super Cup, and kind of in classic, Pedro fashion, he scores the winning goal in the 115th minute. Just as he scored the winning goal in the 115th minute in the European Super Cup in 2009 against Shakhtar Donetsk. He'd only been on the pitch for 20 minutes, I think. Before the game, Robert Fernandez, the sporting director at Barcelona, had said, I've spoken to Pedro. He's told me he wants to go. This could be his last game. Pedro scores this goal, his 99th goal for Barcelona, and then afterwards says, I think what Fernandez said is the Spanish word is unfortunate. I mean, obviously, basically, is out of line, is misplaced. I've barely spoken a couple of words with him. Pedro was then asked, essentially, you mean you haven't asked to go? And he said, well, not like that. In other words, what he said is, yeah, please let me go. It's just not a case of kind of laying down an ultimatum. What I find baffling in this is that Pedro's buyout clause is €30 million. Manchester United, as I understand it at least, have made a bid, which is not a million miles off 30 million euros. I don't understand, given that that's a buyout clause and that ends it, and that means, right, no hassle, here it is, here's the money, off you go. Why didn't they just do it? And that makes me a little bit suspicious. Pedro was asked after the game on Wednesday, is this your last game? He said, I don't know. I think he was telling the truth. I think he doesn't know it's his last game, but I think he certainly knows he'll be gone pretty soon.
Wow. Okay. What about De Gea? Is he going to go to Real Madrid, or has that passed, do you think?
Well, good question. Throughout the summer, Manchester United's position with De Gea has been very clear. He does not go unless you sell us Sergio Ramos. Ramos will renew his contract almost certainly either over the course of the weekend or very early next week. He hasn't actually signed anything yet and agreed anything, but the offer has been made, and both sides expect this to be done very quickly now. And United's position was always that. Now that they know that the Ramos thing is over, definitively over, I mean, in truth, they probably knew this a fortnight ago after that meeting in China. But now that they know that, my doubt now is, do they give in on De Gea? And obviously, you lot will know this probably better than me. And it sounds to me over the last couple of weeks like Van Gaal has been making the kind of noises that the manager makes when he is going to let a goalkeeper go rather than when he's not. But perhaps United think, well, what's the point of having the money? Him staying is worth much more to us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially, even if it's only one season.
Yeah. Sid, you mentioned the Super Cup, which took place in Tbilisi on Tuesday night. Barcelona.
That didn't Tbilisi too many people, Jimbo.
Oh, I tell you what, Tbilisi me was the exciting pre-game show. Did you see this?
No, I must confess I didn't.
This is extraordinary, with these four kids miming while Imagine played. But miming to a different song, as far as I could tell. It's worth it. I hope someone's put it on YouTube.
Hang on, so they're miming Imagine, but the song that's being played isn't Imagine.
No, the song that's being played is Imagine. I don't know what they were miming to, but they obviously felt that asking these kids to actually learn the words and pretend to sing them would be too much. So if they could just kind of wave their hands and open their mouths as if they were singing, but they just did it
so
completely
out of sync
with the music.
It's just like a standard episode of Top of the Pops, then. Really bad miming. No, I'm afraid I didn't see that. Sorry. I did see the game, which was quite good, though.
How was the game?
Yeah, it was pretty good, wasn't it? I mean, Barcelona, obviously, this is kind of bad. This has been kind of bad news for Barcelona. This game was played a five-hour flight away, a game that finished at nearly 1 o'clock in the morning local time. They got back to Barcelona at 8 o'clock in the morning, and that's not because they, you know, slept and then flown the next day. That's their travel time back. And they play the Super Cup against Athletic Bilbao, what day is it, Thursday, tomorrow night. Then the second leg 3 days later, and then they start the league next weekend. So they're not too pleased about that, about the fact that it went to extra time. But the game itself was brilliant. 4-1 up, finished, got to 4-4, extra time. Pedro, as I said earlier, it kind of had to be Pedro that scored that. He's got a habit of getting really big goals at difficult moments when his team really need him. I think it was Mascherano after the game said he was born for historic moments like this.
All right. Well, tremendous.
Slight stretch, but you know.
Yeah. Sevilla was amazing, though. I mean, taking the lead like that and then pulling it back from 3-1 down against Barcelona to make it.
From 4-1 down.
Sorry, 4-1 down, yeah.
Yeah.
Pulling back three goals.
And it's Sevilla are a great team to watch as well. And they, last year we saw this when they went on that incredible run. I think it was 34 or 35 consecutive home games without losing, which they eventually lost that record to Real Madrid. In that run, they'd been 2-0 down against Barcelona and drawn 2-2. They lose players, but the same kind of sense of kind of dynamism, excitement, commitment and stuff is still there. I still think they're a really nice team to watch. I thought Barcelona, by the way, were brilliant for the first half, but Sevilla's response was fantastic.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you when the league's about to start about what kind of a title race we'll have this year in the Liga, Sid. But right now, many, many thanks for bringing us that. And, when are you going on your holiday? When is it?
Tomorrow.
Oh, when are you coming back from your holiday?
I'm coming back. I'm doing the classic Spanish thing. I don't know if there's this phrase they use in Spain, which is called Operation Return, which makes it sound like it's done with military precision, when in fact what it means is it looks like a war zone. It sometimes feels like every single person in Spain goes away on the 1st of August and comes back on the 31st of August. I will be luckily one day ahead of that.
So you're coming back on the 30th of August?
On the 30th, yeah.
But we won't be talking to you before the start of the Spanish season. In a word, who's going to win the title?
Barcelona are favourites, aren't they?
All right. That's your Spanish season preview. Well, enjoy. How long, producer Ben wants to know, how long will Rafa Benitez last?
Well, it's curious, isn't it? Everybody has this kind of very negative sense of Benitez, and obviously you can't draw too many conclusions from preseason. They've been quite strong defensively, but they've not scored a huge amount of goals. The big change, the really, really big change at Real Madrid with Benitez is the position of Gareth Bale. And Gareth Bale's been made a number 10, basically because Bale wants that and the club wants that at boardroom level. And Benitez's role is to implement that. So far, it doesn't entirely convince, but I guess there is time to get it right. But in Spanish football, where there's less space than there was in England, where you could play long to Bale and give him room to run into, it'd be interesting to see if that works. And if it doesn't work, of course, then yeah, I suppose Benitez probably would be in the firing line.
All right, okay. Sid, enjoy your holiday, and we look forward to catching up with you when you come back from Mallorca.
Fantastic. Speak to you then. Cheerio.
That was Sid Lowe. Martin Carter says, who's made the best signings in Serie A to challenge Juve? But Martin, we're going to talk about that and the prospects for the Serie A season a bit more next Thursday, James, when you'll be joining us again.
Yeah. Good.
Because right now, producer Ben says, Jimbo, I love you, but we've only got 5 minutes to finish this pod. 5 minutes, all right. Clock ticking. What have we got? Ooh, Swansea, Newcastle. Who's the right back for Newcastle? Is that Yamat? Yeah. So he's going to be up against Montero. Dun dun dun. Maybe that's a bit simplistic, I know. But what do you think is going to happen? Swansea against Newcastle?
On the evidence of what I saw last week, I would say Swansea will beat Newcastle. All but right. Who knows?
Yeah, Newcastle look good on the counter attack. They've certainly got players who can cover a lot of ground very quickly. Sissoko, Wijnaldum, very box to box kind of players. And you saw even against a very good Southampton team last week that, you know, even from a Southampton corner, they were capable of going up the other end and scoring. So, danger.
Absolutely. All right. Not sure how dangerous Everton are going to be when they visit Southampton. This is the early game on Saturday. Southampton has just unveiled a new signing, Oriol Romeu.
Yeah, the forgotten man at Chelsea.
I'd forgotten about him, actually. Yeah.
Apparently not so good on two loan spells at Stuttgart and Valencia.
Oh.
But they do need probably more bodies in there, given that they're in the Europa League.
Mm. That's true.
Started the season really well.
Oh, but yeah. Lots of goals.
Lots of goals last season.
Cedric is already the right back, seems to be one of the better signings made this summer.
Right. What is going on with Everton? Is anything going on with Everton?
Well, they haven't really done anything in the transfer market, have they? I think, that's one of the concerns. What is it? Gilafeo and Tom Cleverley. And they really need to sign somebody.
They've just signed, I'm hearing, ooh, the voices in my head, that Mason Holgate, centre-back from Barnsley, who may go on to be as good as the last centre-back they signed from Barnsley.
Was that John Stones?
Yes.
All right, brilliant. Well, there you go, problem
but
solved.
They got Tom Cleverley in.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, Martinez's penchant for bringing in Spanish-style players.
Hmm. And actual Spanish players like De La Feu. Yeah. Watford, West Brom, that's another game. Mm-hmm. Watford had an exciting start, didn't they? West Brom, not so much. Solomon Rondon has come in for West Brom, which I presume is to allow Berahino to leave, at least that's the impression. Solomon Rondon, straight out of Zenit St. Petersburg, of course.
Yeah, Jonathan Wilson wrote a good article about that. Apparently, Tony Pulis rang Andrei Villas-Boas to ask him if there was any players in Russia he should be aware of that. And there's a new law in Russia instigated by Vladimir Putin, who is worried about the team's poor performances in qualifying for Euros, that clubs are no longer, they're only allowed to have 6 foreign players on their books. So Zenit are having to offload some because they've already got rid of Rondon, who's a 25-year-old Venezuelan, apparently a very good player with a good attitude and a good bloke to boot, who should be an asset to West Brom. And they've had to get rid of him, and they're going to have to ship out, I think, 3 or 4 other players. And this law was implemented, I think, 3 days before the Russian season started. But if Vladimir says it has to be done, then it has to be done. Andrei Villas-Boas was very, very critical of this decision, which leads me to believe he may end up breaking rocks in a gulag in Siberia or something.
Because that's what happens. Yeah, he's losing a player who scored 20 goals in 37 games for Zenit.
He's unlikely to play against Watford.
Oh.
Because of a lack of match fitness.
All right.
I don't think Pulis will be going with two strikers again, last year, like he did against City.
Apparently not. Apparently not. Also, on the Premier League calendar this weekend, we've got Sunderland against Norwich. Adam Johnson out for a couple of months, along with all his other problems. Anything else you want to say about Sunderland Norwich?
Well, Norwich were quite unlucky against Crystal Palace last week. They played very well for the first 25 minutes, I think. Sunderland were a disaster. So, yeah, on that evidence, again, looking at it logically, you'd go for the Norwich win, even though it's at Sunderland. Their home record isn't particularly anything to shout right home about.
Right. So. I'm just hearing that Yanam Villa hasn't been suspended, or his suspension's been rescinded. Is that right? Oh, so where were, because it was from France, was it? Or no, from, sorry, the reserves.
Reserve game.
Okay. Right. Let's leave that then. Right. Hey, that just gives us time to mention Monday's game, Jacob. Do you know what that is?
Liverpool-Bournemouth. Ooh. A great occasion for the Bournemouth fans who'll be going up there to see their side play at Anfield in the first ever away game in the top flight of English football.
Right. There was a lot of excitement about Bournemouth before the start of the season. They lost at home to Aston Villa.
Yeah,
did you have the impression that there was more to them, more to come?
Yeah, they're a good side. They scored 97, 98 goals in the Championship last season, so we know that they can hurt teams. But I think last weekend, they were just, Eddie Howe said they were anxious in the final third, which hopefully, as it goes on, will be something they can rid themselves of that nervousness in when they're trying to make that final pass, final shot, which obviously is a slightly different level in the Premier League than it was in the Championship. But you would expect them to probably come up a little short against Liverpool, even though Liverpool weren't so great against Stoke last week. That was still a big win, given what happened for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the Bills, they've played each other a couple of times as well.
In the League Cup?
In the League Cup and the FA Cup, and Liverpool have been pretty comfortable in both games.
Right.
But it is nice for their fans going to their first away Premier League game, that it's a sort of a introduction to the realities of Premier League, that they're being sent all the way up to Liverpool on a school night.
Good old
telly.
Good old telly, absolutely. Now, that's it then. That's it for Football Weekly Extra. Thanks to Barry, to James, to Jacob, to producer Ben. And we're back on Monday with our reaction to all of that. EFS is back on Sunday night as well, isn't it?
It is indeed.
It's a big game, isn't it? PSG, the French champions, who are they taking on?
Ajaccio.
But not that Ajaccio.
No, the smaller one.
Right.
Whose name escapes me.
It's Gazalek Ajaccio.
Gazalek.
Whose budget, I believe, last year was €3.4 million. It's going to be quite a sizzler, that one.
Sorry, what game is this?
Huh?
What game is this?
This is PSG against Gazalek Ajaccio.
In Ligue 1?
Yeah, amazingly. Ligue 1. That all kicks off on... the French started last weekend, but EFS is back Sunday night. If you want to tune in, we'll have all the goals from, Germany and France. Yeah, and then that whopping game.
And the new league that is on BT.
Oh, Swiss football.
Yeah.
Swiss football. And if that wasn't enough to make you excited about the days to come, dear listener, then know that Philippe Auclair will be joining us on Monday. How about that? Just Philippe, that's all we need. Yep. Cool. All right, then, have a super weekend. Catch you later.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. From the unusual to the extraordinary, your website stands out when you build it with Squarespace. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com/guardian.